Hi, my name is Yona. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic and dysfunctional parents.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for being here. And I especially want to thank people who came here from, who aren't in the program just to support me. So thank you very much. Okay, what I would like to do first is, will you please say the Serenity Prayer with me? God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. When I first, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now is a good way to start. I was adopted, so it started right away. I think I was 3 weeks old when I was adopted, and I try to be funny, as some of you know, but sometimes I say sad jokes. My sad joke about that is that they give puppies and kittens more time with their mom before, you know, like 6 weeks. So that affected me greatly. And this year, my mom is finally sober. She's been sober for 8 months. She's also been dead for 8 months. So, you know, it works one way or the other, okay? So, you know, one way or another, we get to God. And our alcoholics get to God, too. You know, I just prefer this way than the way my mom chose. So that was hard to lose another mom. You know, I still don't know who my original mom was. And I was abused, so I have trauma and neglect and, you know, just inappropriate behavior from my parents, and that's all I really knew. And so that was what was normal to me. And I think that's what's hard about, maybe that's what's hard about being in this program, is that it's full of people where dysfunction is the norm. So how the hell do you, you know, how do you relate with people other than dysfunctionally? Or maybe I'll talk about myself. How do I relate to people other than dysfunctionally? My brother was born from my parents, and he definitely qualifies for this disease and for this program, rather. And he was not a good boy. And I think I learned from watching him to be a good girl. So I became that people pleaser, the I'll do anything to survive, to have you like me, to not be yelled at. Basically, anything I do is to avoid being yelled at. And it's, again, I guess I have a sick sense of humor, because I was going to say, funnily enough, I live with my dad, who's a rageaholic. But that's not funny. But that's how I've also learned to get through this is, you know, it's either laugh, cry, or now I say sigh. Just don't know how else to do it. So he's a rageaholic, and he will yell at me for I don't know what. And what I've learned through going to meetings and having a sponsor and talking about what's going on in my life right now is, and sharing and being open and honest, is that trying to talk to him is like trying to talk to a wall, and trying to, you know, convince the wall to move, which is this about as useful as trying to convince somebody else to change. You know, that's about as well as it works. So, and you know, some of the gifts that my mother gave me, aside from her alcoholism, dysfunctional drug addiction, crazy dependency, et cetera, is she told me at a very young age, you can't change anyone but yourself. So I grew up with that message. I also grew up with a lot of other crazy messages, but now I see, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. Another message, she used to wear a button on her backpack, and it said, "It's never too late to have a happy childhood." And she wore that button for herself, but I am convinced that God brought that button into her life for me. So, you know, I won't go into the gory details about how messed up, you know, my life was. All of us have some sort of trauma. I think birth is a trauma in and of itself. Just being a child and having no power is traumatic. And then when you're a child, under the supervision, so to speak, of an addict and a dependent personality and an alcoholic is, there's talk about powerlessness. So I'm powerless over having lived as a child under that kind of experience. I always knew that self-growth was important to me, and I felt like I was kind of smarter than my mom in that sense, that I knew what I needed better than she did, obviously, and she really was not there for me. She was a therapist, and when I told her about the molestation of that her then boyfriend did to me, she kicked me out of the house, not him. And that was normal for me. You know, that's just like, well, okay, because she and I got in a fight. So, of course, and she didn't quite understand and never really was happy that I didn't go to her marriage to him, which happened afterward. If I made a spoof movie instead of my mother married a chainsaw murderer, or whatever it was, an axe murderer, you know, mine would be my mother married a pedophile. So, after she knew about it. So that's pretty disturbing. And to me, it's a wonder that I'm here. I am just so grateful that I made it through that. And I know that our stories are all different. And it really did affect how I then related to everybody else, you know, and I look at girls who are 10 years old, and I just go, wow, that's just really sad. So my childhood was taken away, and yet I'm still an adult child. So that's the paradox, is that I wasn't allowed to be a child, and yet for the, you know, what, 46 years now, I've been an adult child. I don't blame myself for that, though. So I'll go on to what happened is I joined another program. I'm so grateful this is not my first program. And anyone to you who is here and has not gone through the steps in another program, I bow to you, and I pray for you. And I'm here to tell you that the steps work. Okay, so don't give up. Don't give up. I am, like I said in the reading, I have all kinds of dysfunctions and that manifest in different ways. And I, the one that I know of that I couldn't control is what brought me into 12-step. And now I'm grateful for that one thing that I couldn't stop. Because it got me to God in a way that I never thought would happen to me. And it brought a solution. And it, wait, that's the what it's like now. So I spent years and years being depressed and out of control and really without a sense of self. That's what happened to me. And I, through coming to meetings, I would discover patterns that I had. So one thing my mom used to do is she would sit on her couch waiting for her druggy child molester boyfriend to come over. And he wouldn't come over because he would flake out. And she would sit on her couch and cry. And so I, being the adult child, as a child, the people pleaser, I would go up to her and hug her to make her feel better. I was talking in a meeting about that and then immediately talked about how I would, when I was in a relationship, I would lie down on the couch in the freezing cold and wait for my boyfriend to come home. And I realized, oh my God, I'm doing the same thing that I saw my mother do. And what brought it up was I was reading something in another book, another recovery book, about waiting for someone who doesn't cook to bring you dinner. Yeah. So that is one way to my heart, by the way, is to feed me. And that's another thing that I my self-esteem actually was really, really affected the way I eat, or rather the way I didn't eat, because I wasn't worth buying food. I wasn't worth having the time to sit down and eat food. So at one point when I was about 30, or 29 or 30, I weighed 72 pounds. And so, you know, I was literally starving myself, but not meaning to. I mean, why feed this person, you know? I was so used to being neglected and hungry in one way or another. Yeah. So now I have a little belly and I don't care. I'm just happy. I realized that I would never, that was actually the one time I liked my body, was when I was 72 pounds. I am only 5 feet tall, for those of you who are listening on the tape, but, you know, but still, yeah. It was the only time I liked my body, so I decided, once my doctor was like, what is going on, Yona? I decided that it would be okay to not like my body, because if the only time I like my body is when it's completely emaciated, then, okay, just, it's alright. I have learned through this program and the 12 steps to like myself. I used to go to morning meetings and I would say, you know what? I forgot to hate myself yesterday. And that was a miracle because I had spent most of my time really hating myself, like abhorrence. Obviously, if I'm not feeding myself, that's a sign. So what I'm learning to do is having unconditional self-acceptance. That no matter what I do, no matter what happened, I can't change that. But here I am now, and, you know, I don't as much need you to like me, although, you know, I still want you to. But that's different from needing it. I'm still afraid of being in trouble. I think I'm always in trouble. Oh, God. Everywhere. You know, I used to, when people would, you know, freak out on the in a car because I'm driving and they're, you know, I'm doing something they don't like. And I'd be like, I'm sorry, and I just like hunch over. And since being in this program, I'm like, I'm not sorry, you know. Like I have a right to be in my body. I have a right to be in this world. I have a right to be in your way, almost. You know, I don't want to be in your way, but I have a right to take up space. I have. And, you know, that's like, whoa, okay, 72 pounds, now I'm more than that, or 73, whatever. It's amazing to not feel guilty for, you know, oh, oops, I went when I wasn't supposed to go, or, you know, standing up for myself, whoo, that's a big one. Especially because I'm not very tall, so standing up to myself, you know, for myself is like less than what you guys are. So, you know, I have to be really big and to make up for that. And I really, my life, I survived by being invisible and not seen. And to still, it breaks my heart that, you know, if you ever go to a local agency that gives therapy to kids, and I remember seeing posters up where they asked the kids, you know, what would be your superhero power if you could have any superpower? And a lot of abused kids say to be invisible. That's like the saddest superpower ever. You know, it really is. It really is. But it's a survival skill, so it's the most powerful to those kids. So I'm starting to be okay with not being invisible, and I'm just starting to be okay with making mistakes, especially in a meeting. I make mistakes, and I'm okay, you know. And now, my dad just yelled at me just recently. and he was like, I'm furious with you. And I said, what did I do now? You know, but this time I wasn't afraid. I was really curious. Like, what is it that I did? Because I never know with him. You know, it could just be that I left the dishes out. I don't know. So, I've stopped having this. I won't say stopped. It's lessened, and it's more manageable of this startle response of, I'm in trouble, you're going to be mad at me, and you're going to kick me out. Because he actually says, you're lucky I didn't kick you out or put all your stuff out or something like that, you know, so I live with this constant threat. But what's amazing is that I know I'm okay. I babysat for a little girl. I was her nanny for a little bit, and she was about 3, and she had severe separation anxiety from her mom. And she would cry, or she would do this sort of repetitive motion that was a self-soothing, and in my opinion, a numbing out, you know, a sort of a dissociation, okay, which I was really good at from the time I can't remember. Okay. and I would just watch her, but I wouldn't just watch her. I would sit there with her, and I would say, I know you're sad. You're sad that your mom left. And you're okay. I know you're sad and you miss her, and it's okay to miss her, and it's okay to be sad. And your mom wouldn't leave you if she didn't, you know, she knows that you're safe. You're safe. You're okay. And you're sad. It's okay to be sad. It's okay for me to be sad. It's okay for me to cry and laugh and sigh, whatever I need. And, you know, I don't know how much longer that she was talking to her mom on the phone. And, you know, she's three, so she's hard to understand even for her mom. And so she said on her to the phone, "Mommy, I know I'm okay. I know I'm okay." So sometimes I tell myself that, "I know I'm okay," because I, you know, and I'm sad and I'm okay. Because I'm still making mistakes, and I will, because I'm human. And what is a blessing is that I get to learn from those mistakes. So, you know, I get to observe how it affects me, how it affects others, and that's what I'm finally learning, is that, because I'm not quite as, I hope, as self-consumed about what's going on for me, that I can now see you and say, "Oh my gosh, what I'm doing is affecting someone else." And then I get to make the choice of whether I, you know, what I do about that. Not out of fear of being bad or wrong, which I still is my first, that's my first go-to, is I'm bad and I'm wrong. And I'm guilty and I feel a great amount of shame. Shame is probably the biggest, hardest thing that I've had to deal with. And I'm not over it yet. Because it still comes up, because it's just part of this disease. Part of what I grew up with. And, but I get to decide, and then I get to talk with my sponsor and see, you know, am I taking this too seriously? Is this something to, you know, ask myself if I want to keep doing? And then, you know, steps 6 and 7, you know, if I'm finally sick of it enough, that's a good sign. That's a good sign. I used to hate that part. I used to hate that part that of like, "I'm so sick of it." Oh, that means you're ready. You know? Oh, okay. That's cool. You know? Cause then I get to see the freedom of release. And, that's not easy for me to do because of abandonment issues that I want to hold on so badly. You know, I think that that's the way that I can survive, and it's really not. It's dragging me along. I'm getting more and more injured, so I'm learning how to let go. I'm learning how to laugh, which I'm really grateful for, because most of the time I just cried. So, what it's really like now is I get to be aware. I get to cry with you instead of crying alone. That's pretty cool. And I get to laugh and be laughed at, which, you know, that's not so bad, especially when I can laugh at myself. Again, may have a morose sense of humor, but one of the quotes that I remember as I really turned around my perception, and I don't know who said it, so if someone knows, that'd be great to know, but it's, "Don't take life too seriously. You'll never get out of it alive." Right? I mean, okay, so, you know, survival, that's eventually not going to work for me. Ah, oh, shit, that's gnarly, you know? But I'm so grateful that I survived long enough to find you. And to not just do it alone. And it's really hard to do alone. In fact, we can't. We can't do this alone. And I don't want to anymore. I used to want to. And now I don't. And that takes a lot of courage. So I guess that's the courage part of the Serenity Prayer. You know, is that we show up and we share. And we cry and we laugh. And we forgive each other. And that's what I wanted to do, is forgive myself. Because I forgive you for your issues, you know, because they're not your fault. They're not your fault. And same with me. They're not my fault. I came by it honestly. But still, I don't have to keep doing it. And that's the choice. And so now I'm going to do something that may or may not be PC. But I'm gonna end with a joke that I just think is great. I'm Jewish, so I'm allowed to tell this joke. Okay? And you don't have to like it. And my Jewish mother told me this joke, so blame her. Okay, so there's this old Jewish man. He's in a movie theater, and the movie... and so before the movie starts, he's saying, "Oi, am I thirsty?" That's thirsty for you, goy. "Oi, am I thirsty? Oi, am I thirsty?" And the movie starts, and these people behind him are going, "Oh, I hope he shuts up when the movie, you know, starts." "Oi, am I thirsty? Oi," you know, the movie's going on. "Oi, am I thirsty?" And then they decide, okay, he's not going to shut up unless we go get him a drink. So they go get him a drink, and they bring it back, and he drinks the drink. And then he says, "Oi, was I thirsty? Oi, was I thirsty? Oi, was I thirsty?" That's "Oh, was I thirsty?" Again. So part of what I really want to do in this fellowship is not keep saying, "Oi, was I thirsty?" You know. "Oi, was I abused? Oi, was I," you know, is that I want to have fun, and I want to, I want to watch the movie and eat popcorn, you know, and then go out to coffee with you after. So, to many days of good fellowship during, before, during, and after the meetings. Thank you for being here.
"Oi, was I nervous?"